We have poisoned 39,000 of our pets by feeding them food made by 100 different companies. This leads one to ask, what is in the food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 538th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Wanaka who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
Folks, in an incident that is eerily reminiscent of the leafy green contaminations of last year, we have poisoned our pets by feeding them the top names in pet foods. According to an extrapolation made by Banfield Pet Hospitals, which operates 651 of the nation's pet hospitals, they estimate that 39,000 of our pets were poisoned by the foods that we gave them. This leads one to ask, how could so many pets get poisoned by so many pet food companies at one time? Can what happened to pet food happen to people food? And what can we do to protect our pets and ourselves from poison foods? With us today to help us find some answers, we have Dr. Gene Hoffey, who is a pet nutrition expert from the great state of Colorado. Dr. Gene, welcome aboard.
Hi, Michael. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. You're with a website called Little Cat Big Dog, or Little Cat
No.
Big Cat.
Little
Cat Big Cat.
Little Big Cat.
Okay.
Little Big Cat. .com.
Little
Remember
Big Cat.
Remember the movie with Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah, Little Big Man.
Like Little Big Cat.
Okay, littlebigcat.com. We got that wired. What is littlebigcat.com, and what are you doing there?
Well, Little Big Cat is kind of a labor of love. I have used that for an outlet to publish all of my articles. I have about 70-something articles in our free library there on various topics on health, nutrition, behavior for cats, and some for dogs, although I was a feline veterinarian for 12 years. So
okay, good.
That's my bias.
Work with the kitty cats. We always ask, who pays the way?
Oh, well, the credit card company.
The credit card company, right? Magic credit card.
Yeah. We do sell a few PDF articles on that site, but basically we support it with another website called Spirit Essence.
Okay.
Where we sell flower essences for animals.
Okay. So you're a business person.
Oh, well, not a very good one, but yeah.
Okay, good. Also with us today, we have Mark Rishnew, who is, did I pronounce that right, Mark?
Yes, you did.
Okay, good. He's a director of clinical research for the Veterinary Information Network, right?
That's true, yes.
And what is the Veterinary Information Network?
The Veterinary Information Network, or VIN as we call it, is a paid membership community. Veterinarians subscribe to the community, and it's an online community that deals with day-to-day issues for veterinarians, ranging from practice management issues, but predominantly medical issues. They can post questions, they can educate themselves, or there's consultants available to help answer and manage cases with them.
Okay, good. And who pays your way?
Paul Pyon pays my way. He's the founder of the Veterinary mm-hmm. Information Network. And it's we are purely by subscription only for veterinarians.
Okay.
So, our membership pays our way.
Okay, good. Fair enough. Got that squared away. Has this incident really proved to be a remarkable one in the world of pets? I mean, has it really raised as much stink as one would believe? Start with you, Dr. Gene.
Well, yes, I think this has really shocked many people to the core, because the pet food companies have for so many years told us that they make a safe, healthy product for our pets, and that it provides completely complete nutrition. You don't have to do anything else, just feed this all the time, which is so counterintuitive to anything we would do with our own children, but nevertheless, people have fallen for that line and have put their entire trust, laid aside their common sense and trusted the pet food companies to provide a safe product, and they've really let us down.
Mark?
I think it is probably the biggest of the issues that has come up recently with pet foods. There have been others in the recent past, but this one, you know, has certainly hit the media because it affected so many animals and because of the lack of awareness of how the pet food industry actually functions with the production of certain ingredients or even full products centralized to, you know, a small number of companies.
Well, that's certainly where we want to go with this program. We want to get into that issue. But let's start kind of at the basics of it here. Banfield Pet Hospitals, which operates, I think, 615 pet hospitals around the country, kind of extrapolated from its experiences and came to the conclusion that somewhere in the neighborhood of 39,000 pets became sick. Many were killed from the pet food that we fed them. So let's start with, it seemed to be little pets and not big pets that suffered most. Is that your experience, Jean?
Well, I think that's true, although I have heard quite a few big dogs have also been affected, Airedales, Golden Retrievers, fairly large dogs. But the key here is that these were all canned products and mostly canned products in small packages, and those tend to be fed to the smaller dogs and the cats. So I think it's a matter of the exposure was higher in smaller pets.
Okay, good. Mark, your experience?
Yeah, no, that's what we've found is we did a survey. Firstly, I want to raise one small point, and the extrapolation of the 39,000
right.
is a very crude extrapolation to a very precise number.
You're absolutely right.
We've made some of our own estimates, and we've tried to model this based on a survey that we've conducted of our members. And we have about 16,000 veterinarians online, of whom about 2,000 have partaken in our survey. If we use those numbers and go out, we can say that probably somewhere in the hundreds to thousands of animals have actually died as a result of this, and somewhere in the thousands to 10,000. You know, an order of magnitude greater have probably been affected and yet recovered. So whilst, you know, we can't put a specific number on it, we think that we're, you know, the Banfield number is probably in the ballpark. I think it's a little too precise to be able to say, you know, 39,000.
Sure, of course it is.
Or whatever. But, you know, it's certainly in the thousands affected, and probably in the hundreds to thousands that have been actually killed by this.
You think hundreds of thousands?
No, hundreds, 2,000.
Oh, hundreds, 2,000.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, good.
So, yeah, definitely, you know, it's a...
So a lot of pets were taken out, essentially.
Exactly.
Big pets versus small pets? Have you seen any relationship there?
We've seen about twice as many cats affected as dogs, and again, as Jean just pointed out, it's probably simply a logistic issue of the types of foods that were mainly contaminated or appear to have been contaminated, being canned foods and pouch foods, the chunks and gravy type products. Which are fed predominantly to small animals because of the cost involved. So you don't tend to feed a St. Bernard canned food, you tend to feed them dry kibble, which is manufactured in a different way, in a different facility, using different ingredients, which were not necessarily as contaminated.
Okay.
So, yes, it makes sense that that would be the case.
What happened to the pets, Gene, when we fed them this poison stuff?
Oh, it caused... acute kidney failure, which is a fairly painful and ugly thing to have. When your kidneys stop working, the toxins that your kidneys normally filter out start building up in the bloodstream. One of those is ammonia, causes a heck of a headache, and it's pretty serious. You know, the kidneys are one of those things that you just can't do without.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Yeah, no, virtually the only effect that we've noticed in our report, the predominant effect has been acute renal failure for an unexplained in cases where there was no other explanation. For instance, the antifreeze poisoning can give you a virtually identical picture. Most of these patients had not had exposure to antifreeze, but and yet they were suffering very similar symptoms. Their kidneys were basically being obstructed. There were crystal deposits being identified on postmortems within the kidneys themselves. And, you know, it's purely an acute renal failure scenario that we're aware of.
Okay, folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for today. Today we're talking about what happened. What did we do to our pets? And can what happened to our pets happen to us? What do you think? We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. We have Dr. Gene Hoffe, who is a pet nutrition expert from Colorado. Big Cat, Small Cat, I think was the name of her website. I better check that out here. Or maybe it was Little Cat, Big Cat. Also with us, Mark Grishnu, Director of Clinical Research, Veterinary Information Network, or VIN, from California. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking about what on earth did we do with our pets. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 39,000 of them were poisoned when we fed them the top names in commercial pet food. Holy smokes, how did that happen? What do you think? We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're talking with Dr. Gene Hovey, who is with a pet nutrition expert, a veterinarian pet nutrition expert. And you can find her at littlebigcat.com, littlebigcat.com. Got that right, Gene?
Got it right.
Okay.
Good boy.
And Mark Grishnu, who is with a Veterinary Information Network in California, VIN. What's your website, Mark?
VIN.com.
And that's for professional vets around the country?
That's for veterinarians, and there is a layperson website, a sister website called veterinarypartner.com.
For us mere mortals, right?
That's right.
Okay, good. So, what happened? Do we know? Or was it kind of like the leafy green situation where we really don't know what happened? Do we know what happened? Gene?
I don't think we really know what happened fully. The current suspect is the wheat gluten that was in the food that mm-hmm. apparently was imported from China and accidentally or deliberately had a toxic material put in it.
Accidentally or deliberately?
You mean? Yes, there is some suspicion that this material was added to the wheat gluten on purpose for some reason, either to raise the protein percentage, make it more saleable. It's not a permitted food additive in the United States, but what really happened, Michael, is that pet food makers were looking for a cheaper way to make food and increase their profits, and this is what has resulted.
Mark?
Yeah, we don't know exactly what happened. The initial, what is apparent through the FDA investigations, and we've been talking to the FDA about this quite a lot, is that wheat gluten was contaminated. Wheat gluten is a common ingredient in pet food manufacture. It was sourced, you know, through the global market, and it was obtained from a supplier in China. It turns out after analyzing this that a substance known as melamine, which is actually a precursor for Formica tabletops and things like that.
Formica tabletops?
Yeah, it's actually melamine. Monomers are used, combined into a polymer, which actually forms the Formica that you see on your laminated countertop.
So somebody deliberately put Formica tabletops into the pet food.
Well, it's the ingredient that's used to make that particular product. It's one of the uses. It's also a very high nitrogen product.
Ah.
So melamine has a lot of nitrogen in it. And nitrogen is also a component of protein.
Right.
So if you want to make your substance look like it's got more protein in it, you want to increase the nitrogen content. And so one way to do that would be to add a non-protein nitrogen source. In this case, there's some suspicion that the company in China added melamine, which is a non-protein nitrogen source, to make their product appear to have more nitrogen than it really does, and therefore more protein than it really does, and therefore command a higher price on the market.
Whoa. Let's go quickly to Nikki, who has an observation of what all of this meant. Nikki, are you there?
Yeah, I definitely am. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Very good, Nikki. Thanks for calling today.
I would like to speak to you about this. I had a friend whose cat died also from kidney failure. And we believe that it was linked to this. It's most unfortunate. My baby squirrel that I got because this cat had originally brought it in as a gift to my friend. And I helped him when he was going through a lot of this pain. I told him, just make a promise you never attack any more baby squirrels. So, but the thing is that when did... I hear what you're saying is components of this protein thing,
mm-hmm.
but when did rat poison become a form of food additive? I don't get this. And I think
that's a great question, because this is also something that has been claimed as be a constituent of this wheat gluten. Mark, can you address that? Was rat poison ever, does it figure into this as well?
Yeah, so initially, and I actually am at Cornell in New York State, and some of the investigation was originally done by the state food diagnostic laboratories out in Albany in conjunction with investigators at Cornell, and they appeared to identify a compound called aminopterin in the original contaminated wheat gluten. Several other companies and other laboratories have tried to confirm that over the subsequent weeks. And nobody else has been able to identify aminopterin as a contaminant within the affected gluten. And at this point, the FDA have discounted that as a potential contaminant source.
So is this widespread or is this just for animal? Because gluten is something that people eat. Personally, I don't think people should be buying store-bought pet foods as it is. If you look at Iams and the campaign that was against Iams, I'm sure you're aware of, the cruelty that they have done to animals in their labs. So many pet owners do not know, because they probably don't go to a lot of the animal rights websites and stuff, but there are photos of horrific wounds and stuff with these animals, flesh growing around the cages and stuff, with Iams. And yet they come out as a viable pet. They should cook their own pet food or make sure that they are getting food from a natural source, and right now I think is a wonderful time for more natural, even some vegetarian foods, to be coming out more, companies that are holistic and more organic, to be creating more pet foods. Make sure it's balanced for the animal, you know, with the proteins they need, or cook up your own fish for the animals. That way you're making sure that they are getting proper nutrients. This would be a lot safer than buying these store-bought
you raise a very interesting question, Nikki, and let me put it in a little bit different way. We're often told by veterinarians not to feed our pets table scraps, and I've tried to tell my dog that a number of times, but she just won't listen. But why do veterinarians tell us not to feed our pets people food, Jean?
Well, a lot of vets say that. I am not one of them. The reason seems to be that the pet food companies want to create a complete and balanced food. And they say that if you add anything to that, it will unbalance the food, which doesn't really make any sense. So I am of the mind that if it's pretty good for you, it's probably pretty good for your dog. And I do encourage people to add meat, particularly for cats. Meat, they need meat. And I also encourage people to feed fresh meat and vegetables to their dog. Now, there is the issue of if you feed more than 10 or 15% of the diet as these added foods, then you have to worry about calcium balance and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do recommend home-cooked meals and adding of fresh food.
Okay, Mark, why do veterinarians tell us not to feed our animals human food?
I think the biggest issue is the concern of long-term administration of a diet that is going to be markedly deficient or excessive in certain nutrients. So certainly for animals like cats, cats are obligate carnivores, and therefore we need to be careful about how we provide certain nutrients to cats.
In other words, cats would not make very good vegans, right?
Cats don't make good vegans at all, no. There's a lot of convenience factor with feeding a properly balanced commercial pet food. There's oftentimes less of a waste issue and things like that. Certainly, it is possible to feed home-cooked diets. If people are wanting to do that, we recommend that they consult with a veterinary nutritionist to actually compose or compile a diet specifically for their pet that has been evaluated by a nutritionist and balanced for ingredients. It does require fairly stringent adherence to a recipe. You can't just take a generic recipe and say, for the rest of my pet's life, this is what I'm going to feed.
Isn't that kind of true with people, too?
Sure, and our diet tends to be a lot more varied, so we tend to
get a balance.
We get more of a balance. Then again, if you look at the epidemics of diabetes...
Good point. We're going to have to take a quick...
Are we really feeding ourselves the right food?
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Right back, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Join us. Well, what do you think happened when we poisoned our pets with our top names in pet food? We're trying to figure that out today. We have Dr. Gene Hovey, who is a pet nutrition expert and a veterinarian in Colorado. You can find her at littlebigcat.com. Also, we have with us Dr. Mark Rishnu, who is a director of clinical research with the Veterinary Information Network. And, of course, we have you. All you have to do to join us today is pick up your phone and dial 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080 on California's Central Coast. We were talking with Nikki, so let's pick her up and let her finish her comments. Nikki, welcome back.
Hi. I have done a lot of animal rescue, from everything from marine mammals and doing rescue there with them to mammals, to birds, to little exotic animals and raised animals, also all different kinds. But what I see with this, and I think this isn't my final comment, but one of the things I wanted to say was I think that this is one of two things, or maybe both. Who knows? But I heard that this came out of China, the
right.
additive. Now, this could either be greedy industry trying to cut corners and hoping we just don't notice what they're doing, or I think it might be some sort of a trial run that was planned to try and do harm.
So kind of a food terrorism thing?
Uh-huh.
We'll try it out on pets?
Yeah, it's too widespread for this to have been an accident.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold and pick up our experts and have them comment on that, okay?
Okay,
hold on, and then we'll... Dr. Jean, do you think it could have been a deliberate event?
Well, I think it probably was deliberate, but the motive is the question. And I think the motive was probably monetary more than terrorism. Although early on in the thing, that thought certainly did occur to me and many other people. But the financial profit-making reason for diluting the product with something that was cheap for them to put in and would get them a higher price, that sort of motive makes more sense to me and
the world
we live in.
So in other words, if I pour some Formica tabletop and some rat poison into this wheat gluten, it'll increase the protein content and I can charge more for it, right?
Exactly.
Mark?
Sad to say, but yes.
Mark?
I think, you know, the global economy is such these days that we don't know where a lot of the base ingredients for any of our products, or whether it's food manufacturer or other manufactured product, comes from. If we looked at, for instance, in the human food chain, if we looked at high fructose corn syrup, there's not a container in this country that you can't find that as an ingredient of that particular food product. And yet, it's probable that a lot of these companies are buying their high fructose corn syrup from a common distributor, and it's traded as a commodity, and whatever their broker happens to find as the best priced high fructose corn syrup is the one that all these companies are going to use, because that's their broker's recommendation for cost cutting to provide you with a cheap food product. The same thing happens with pet foods, where gluten is a common ingredient in pet food manufacture. A pet food broker or the companies that were manufacturing this would have looked on the global market. Okay, there's a source of wheat gluten here that is going at a good price. We're going to order that. The reason why so many animals got affected is because of the manufacturer is for these particular products was so specialized that only a certain number of plants can actually produce the chunks and gravy style or the particular canned food variety.
Well, it seemed like it was one plant in Canada, right?
There were, I believe, three plants or four plants that have been identified. The company is based in Canada, but I think the manufacturer was actually in U.S. plants.
Mm-hmm.
It's a company called Menu Foods that actually manufactures these particular canned and pouch varieties on behalf of a range of...
on behalf of everybody, right?
Various brands. Yes, they do. They make them. They've basically got the technology that makes this particular style of food. And so it would be the same if there was a company that made all the ketchups that get different brand names put on them, and they happen to source their particular variety of high fructose corn syrup from one company. Well, then all these different brands are going to be affected equally, because it's a common ingredient. And it's not necessarily that a high quality pet food and a low quality pet food are made the same because they're all coming from the same plant. They're using similar common ingredients in some of those in some of the manufacturing process.
Okay, we're going to slip really quickly back here to Nikki and have her finish up her comments. Nikki?
Some of the things I wanted to say was, first off, is in relation to China. The second, my final comments will be about what we can do. China, as we know, has a very cool industry with skinning dogs alive in their streets and selling the fur that you see on the market.
Wait a minute. What did you say?
You didn't know about their industry, about skinning dogs alive. You can find it on Paul McCartney's wife's website. There's a link.
Why would anybody want to skin a dog alive?
You didn't know about this, Michael?
No.
They warehouse thousands and thousands of dogs and cat furs, and there are even videos that you can see online of this, of them doing this to alive, awake dogs in the streets while people onlook. Okay, there's so many dogs that are starving there, and all this other stuff, or whatever they try to.
Well, okay, let's stay focused
they
on this dog.
They sell them into the industry to put on furs. You will find some of these, any carcass that you see out of China, it doesn't designate what type of fur it is. It's mostly the type of fur that you see on parkas with the longer fur and the short fur.
Let's stay focused on the dog food, and maybe that's another issue there.
But one of the things I want to bring out is the fact that they think we're ridiculous for the pets that we have, because there was a part of China recently where they actually designated that this whole city area, they were going to kill everyone's pets, that they were not allowed. And they were going to go from house to house to house and kill all their dogs. Now, of course, they're not going to think twice about an ingredient such as this, which I did hear about on the news. The ingredient came out of a city, was linked back to a city in China. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think this has a great bearing on the situation. Now, what we can do, and as I was saying before, if you can think globally, buy locally, or create your own pet's diet, as he said, with a nutritionalist, a veterinary nutritionalist, and brown rice, no white rice. And one of the reasons that they are concerned about home-cooked food all the time is the fat, okay? And lots of dogs like Labs and Golden Retrievers and a lot of other breeds tend to get obese.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
just
a lot
like
of
people.
Pressure on their heart. Yeah, their cholesterol level. They can't have any butters. I mean, you can give them vegetables. You can sometimes vets even recommend that they might just be partially steamed or raw vegetables, but they don't eat raw vegetables so much. So vegetables without any butter, salt, or any of that, and brown rice, not white rice. So you see that. They have these lamb and rice recipes, so they've got all this other junk thrown in.
Okay, Nikki, thank you so much for your call. We're going to have to take a quick break. Appreciate your call. We're going to come back and talk with Roxanne, but we also have the experts who may be able to help us feed our pets. Dr. Gene Hovey with littlecatbigcat.com, and Mark Rishnu, who is the Director of Clinical Research at Veterinary Information Network, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Can what happened to pet food happen to people food? And if it does, what's going to happen to us? Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, we're back. We're talking about what happened when we poisoned our pets with some of the top names in pet food. 39,000 of them is a rough estimate, and maybe more, maybe less. Who in the heck knows? We have with us Dr. Gene Hovey, who is with littlebigcat.com. There, I got it right, littlebigcat.com. She is a pet nutrition expert from Colorado. Also with us, we have Mark Rishnu, who's the Director of Clinical Research at Veterinary Information Network, VIN.com, which is a resource for active veterinarians. And we have you. We're going to go quickly to Roxanne, who has a question. Roxanne, welcome to the food chain.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. My question is, I've been cooking for my animals, my cat and my two dogs, ever since this happened. And I have kind of an elaborate little setup where I make like 8-pound meat loaves at a time with a third to half meat.
Any complaints from the animals?
God, you know what? They sit with their tongues out. The minute I open my eyes, they want breakfast. And, you know, when they know it's feeding time in the evening, they're just right there now. Uh-huh. But I wear vegetables around in the food processor so that they can't pick them out.
Mm-hmm.
And brown rice. And the brown rice is already cooked, and then I make it all, the ground meat, into a huge meatloaf and bake it. And I just give them big chunks now equal to the amount of food they should have. So this is what I want to know. I have heard Dr. Wallach say on your station that dogs are meant to be meat eaters. So, and you'll never see them go root out a rutabaga in the morning.
I haven't seen them do that at all. But I have seen my dog quite a few times eat grass.
And avocados, I know they like. I actually know they like apricots, too. Mm-hmm. But what I want to know is, what would you need to do to balance out? I heard Dr. Hovey say calcium. And just to balance that, is that adequate with a wide variety? And then I just had one other thing I wanted to say.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold here. Okay, and then we're going to go to Dr. Hovey, and we're going to go to Dr. Rishnu and ask them about making our own pet food. Dr. Gene, what do you think about balancing things out?
Well, you really need to do your homework and find a recipe or you know, a kind of a tried and true system, because there are a lot of trace minerals and things that may not necessarily be picked up when you're just making it out of different whole foods. Now, that's a little counterintuitive, because as the human species, we've managed to survive all these years cooking for ourselves, although we may not be doing so well anymore.
Yeah.
Given the state of the country. But it is important to do your homework and get a good recipe. There's a great website called balanceit.com that's put out by UC Davis, so neighbors of yours, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrific. I just discovered it, and you can plug in the ingredients that you're using, and it will basically give you a ballpark idea of where your deficiencies or excesses are likely to be.
What was the name of that website again?
Balanceit.com.
Balanceit.com.
Yeah, terrific resource.
Okay.
Highly recommended.
Mark, what do you think? Is it possible to make our own pet food?
I totally agree with Gene. I think that in order to... you could probably feed just about anything. You could feed them Twinkies for a month, and they would probably do okay. But we're not, you know, and in this situation at the moment, a lot of people are looking for that short-term, let's just see, you know, until the problem is over, and then we might go back to feeding the more convenient pet food that we're used to feeding before. Because making your homemade diet is labor-intensive, and it does require you to do the homework. If somebody does want to feed a diet, a homemade diet, I totally agree with Gene. I think there are two sites that I'm aware of, one, balanceit.com, and Vin actually has an arrangement at the moment for clients and for veterinarians who are dealing with the issue of home-cooked diets, where balanceit.com has offered to provide a homemade diet recipe for your pet if you use the promotional code VIN. When you go through the checkout to purchase the diet, effectively you can skip all the credit card payments, and they will construct a diet for your pet. The other one is petdiet.com is another great resource, and again, it will provide homemade recipes. Most of these have nutritionists associated with them who run the ingredients through specialized software that they have developed to measure and analyze the nutrient requirements and nutrient content for the trace elements, the minerals, the calcium, the phosphorus, to make sure that everything is, you know, in the ballpark of where it should be.
Good, thank you.
The third option I would say is that a lot of veterinary schools have nutritional services as well. Veterinary nutrition is still a relatively new emerging specialty within, you know, the academic ranks, but, you know, there can be consultation services that are available to pet owners through a number of the veterinary schools that have nutrition services, where they will help concoct a diet for your pet. And this becomes even more important if your pet has health issues, where a specific type of diet may be either contraindicated or indicated to help manage that disease process.
Okay, quickly, Roxanne, do you have a quick comment before we go?
I did. The Nikki that was talking about the dogs that were slaughtered in China, you know, they came under a lot of world fury when they went door to door just shooting dogs in the head. That's what they did. No more dogs. I'm wondering if any of this poison stuff that we got could have been a covert ingredient in their own food to keep, you know, is that where we accidentally got in on the...
on some of their own population control.
Yeah, I'm really wondering about that.
Roxanne, I've got to go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, folks, we have somehow managed to poison about 39,000 of our pets by feeding them the top names in pet foods, who got their pet food manufactured by the same manufacturer who got their raw materials from some place in China, wheat gluten. And that wheat gluten happened to be contaminated by something that has really wreaked havoc on a lot of our pets. So the question is, will this happen again? And will it happen to us? Well, what do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're talking with Dr. Gene Hovey from littlebigcat.com. Got that right there. And Mark Rishnu, who's the Director of Clinical Research at Veterinary Information Network. Mark, you made a comment earlier, and you were talking about, you know, getting people by until this is over. Will it be over?
I think so, yeah. I've just been looking at our survey where we've been asking our members to report cases that they've been seeing, and virtually, we're basically dropped off to virtually no new cases being reported at this time. So I think that this particular episode, the foods have been largely pulled from the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
The company recalls was very effective and very rapid. I think the response from most companies was very appropriate. and in our dealings with menu foods, it appears that, in fact, they were as responsive as they possibly could be. There will still be the odd can in a small mom-and-pop grocery store, possibly, that didn't make it through the recall. So there's still always the potential, and, you know, we would advise pet owners to go out and check the labels of the foods they're buying. Make sure that it's not dated with the recall numbers that have been published on the menu food site and the FDA site. All the serial numbers and the lot numbers are available for the foods that have been recalled. So do your checking. Make sure you're buying product that is not part of the recall list.
So we have this situation pretty well under control, but given the conditions where one manufacturer makes food for 100 different companies, and one manufacturer is getting its stuff from wherever it can get it cheapest in the world, aren't the conditions ripe for this same thing happening again?
I think it's always a possibility, and I think this has been a fairly, loud wake-up call to the industry to quality assure their own product. A lot of the purchasing for stock, for the base mm-hmm. ingredients, happens over a global market, and you rely on quality assurances from various industry programs. I think a lot of these companies will start to check where they're getting their products from a little more closely, and maybe have it analyzed by independent laboratories prior to incorporating into their product.
Dr. Jean, do you think it's over?
This particular incident is probably winding down. However, there have been, I believe, 12 or 13 recalls of pet food over the last dozen years. So this happens all the time.
It is eerily reminiscent of the leafy green contaminations with E. coli, isn't it, in that respect?
Yes, and if you can actually sign up for recall notices from the FDA, and hardly a day goes by that I don't get something, whether it's people food or pet food. So recalls happen all the time. Our food system is huge, and stuff's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. What can we do to prevent it?
Well, I think the main thing to do is to take responsibility ourselves and not rely on the government or anybody else to do it for us. The doctors have been saying to us for years, eat more, like the commercial said, eat more fruits and vegetables and, eat healthier. And I think that applies to our pets, too. And I think we need to really look at what goes into pet food. And, for instance, the fact that there's wheat gluten in the pet food and it's used to make those cute little slices and nuggets and shapes.
And there you go. We're out of time. I want to thank both of you so much, Jean and Mark, for joining us. Thank all of you for tuning in out there. Remember, join us next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain. And especially remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.